Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Most Merciful, to all of our viewers out there, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. And thank you for joining us again in the intersection of faith and reason with our guest here, Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris. Dr. Ja'far, again, it is a pleasure and honor to be with you, sir. Last time we talked about God and His attributes, and I believe today we will be moving on to another fundamental, if you wish to call it, of the fundamentals of Islam, and that is the concept of life after death.
Yes, and of course, so we want to always to remind the viewers that these fundamentals are also the fundamentals of the early religions.
Sure.
Every prophet, of course, told his people that there is life after death, and he must have given them the same evidence that the Prophet gave.
Yes, and then I think if people want to review this issue more in Surah Hud, where there is a good line of stories of messengers there, and every time a messenger would declare a warning and say, "Inni akhafu alaykum azaba yawmin alim, azaba yawmin kibir," that I fear for you a day, and he would be speaking about the Day of Judgment.
So the Prophet would come and say that this life is not the end. is not the end. There, this is only a short life, and this your existence in this world is only temporary. This world is a world only of test, but the real world is the world to come. Mm-hmm. That after you die, you will be resurrected. You will either go to hell or go to heaven according to what you believed and what you did in this world. Mm-hmm. Now, there were some objections to this by the people who did not accept this truth.
That and resurrection is coming.
Yes. Now, some of the objections of the Arabs were, first, they thought that this was not possible.
Coming back.
Yes. Yeah. And how can they used to come إِذَا كُنَّا عِظَامًا نَخِرَةً, you know, after we have become, what do you say, decaying, you know, bones or so. So the Quran had to prove to them that it is possible. Mm-hmm. And then the Quran tells them that it's not only possible, it must be for moral reasons. Mm-hmm. More rational reasons. Mm-hmm. The possibility, for the possibility, the Quran mentions two things. First, because these people were believers in the Creator. So he said, if you believe in the Creator, you believe that He created you the first time. Why don't you believe that
He can remake you?
Because this should be easier than
the first time.
The first time. So it is possible. There's no doubt about its possibility for someone who believes in the Creator.
At this point, Sheikh, does the Quran assume the existence of God?
Yes, because these people were believers in the existence of the Creator. Secondly, the argument which the Quran elaborates on, the first one that we mentioned, is mentioned in so many verses in the Quran.
Sheikh, if I may, is that the one also towards the end of Surah Yasin? وَضَرَبَ لَنَا مَثَلًا وَنَسِيَ خَلْقًا.
Yes, قَالَ مَنِيحِ الْعِظَامَ وَهِيَ رَمِيمٌ.
And he set a parable to us saying that, and he forgot about his own creation.
Yes.
And he said, who is going to revive these dead bones?
فَسَيَنْبَضُونَ إِلَيْكَ رُؤُسُهُمْ وَيَقُولُ مَنْ يُعِيدُ قُلِ الَّذِي فَطَرَكُمْ أَوَّلَ مَرَّةٍ.
When they object.
If they say, who will bring us back to life, say, the one who created you the first time.
Then that is considered to be a rational argument.
Of course.
If you believe that,
yes,
then this shouldn't be any more difficult.
No, you should not think of it as something impossible. Mm-hmm. It is possible. The second evidence that the Quran gives for the possibility, and not only the logical possibility, you see, there are, one can say these two kinds of possibilities. Mm. A logical possibility, which is very abstract, but the physical possibility. The physical possibility. When you say that this is physically possible, this means that it happened. You have an evidence that it or something like it did happen actually. Hmm. But a merely logical possibility may not never have happened. Sure. Something that is logically possible, as we said, that it is logically possible for the Creator to adopt a son. Logically possible, but he never does this. So what is physically possible? The Quran directs people's attention to the fact that water comes from the sky on barren land, and it comes to life in the sense that after being barren, you see,
revived.
Yes, revived in the sense that you see plants in it. Mm-hmm. So the Quran said that the resurrection of human beings is just like this. Mm-hmm. A human being, when a human being dies, he is just like this barren land. Mm-hmm. And just as God brings this dead land to life, he brings human beings to life. Now, the second argument is repeated in so many verses in the Quran, and we can elaborate on it somewhat. It is a moral argument. Mm-hmm. And also it is known, the Quran repeats it, but some Western philosophers also know about what is called the moral argument for the existence of the Creator. Mm. Moral argument. What is the moral argument? It is very well known that there can be no human society without moral values. Hmm. And morality is not a secondary issue, as some people may say. It is something necessary even for the existence of a society. To see this, imagine a society in which most people, 90%, are liars. So you can't have scientists, because a scientist might make an experiment and he tells you something different from what his experiment led to.
Interesting that just happened, by the way.
Yes, I know. But because, fortunately for people, there were only very few people like this. But we are saying now, if the majority of all the people were liars, there can be no knowledge, because you don't know whether the teacher is telling you the truth or not. You can't read a book. You don't know whether the author is telling you the truth or not. Mm-hmm. So that is why some people expressed this idea beautifully. They said that moral values are the cement of society. Mm-hmm. The cement. Without moral values, there can be no society. If the majority of people become dishonest, or not keeping their promises, or liars, or so. But there are people who are liars. There are people who are dishonest. And there are people who are very truthful. That's right. And had it not been for these people who are truthful, there would be no society at all. Mm-hmm. Now the problem is, people who tell the truth, say, sometimes have to make sacrifices. You tell the truth and you lose $1,000 or so. You tell the truth and you lose a job. And you make that sacrifice. Now, if there is no life after death, people who make these sacrifices will be fools. Because this is the only life you can enjoy, and you are making sacrifices. That's why, and we believe that a rational person does not make any absolute sacrifice. To make an absolute sacrifice is to be irrational. Hmm. So there must be a Creator who knows what people are doing, what they are saying, and there must be a life after death where those who do good are rewarded and those who do evil are punished. Without this, the world will be something. The whole world will be something that is completely based on irrationality. That the people who serve society and keep things going are the people who lose. And the people who tell lies and work against society are the people who gain. So there must be life after this.
And this is the essence of the moral argument.
This is the moral argument. And the Quran, as we said in many verses, for example, أَفَنَجْعَلُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ كَالْمُجْرِمِينَ مَا لَكُمْ كَيْفَ تَحْكُمُونَ. Shall we make the ultimate result, the ultimate, what do you say,
the
ultimate fate of those who submit to God and listen to His and abide by His message and His commands and so on. We treat them the same as those who rebel against God and become criminals. If you believe in the Creator, you would say no. No even wise person would do this, let alone the Creator who is most wise and most. And you find in many verses in the Quran a link between this and the fact that there must be life after death.
Sheikh, before we go on with this, we're going to take a short break and we will come back. We've got some few questions about the subject as well. So please do stay tuned and we will be back soon, inshallah.
Tension there. What about the North Korean nuclear program and the six-party talks? How will the tension there affect a relationship between U.S. and China?
They did that early in 1993, and after long discussion and negotiation, finally they stopped the program.
Will the world be able to stop this flow of secrets? Will it affect international relations? Or were there simply basic known facts for most experts and most diplomats?
And we don't know if there's more to come. It's information war.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back again to the intersection of faith and reason, where we're talking with our guest here, Dr. Jafar Sheikh Idris. Dr. Jafar, you were talking about the moral argument for the possibility of the day of judgment, and you said that...
No, not only possibility.
Or the...
Necessity. There must be a... yes. Yeah.
And you were saying that we were going to elaborate on how the Quran has made use of this argument when talking about the day of judgment.
Yes.
And you were about to give a few examples that should...
Yes. أَفَنَجْعَلُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ the verse which I said, أَفَنَجْعَلُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ كَالْمُجْرِمِينَ مَا لَكُمْ كَيْفَ تَحْكُمُونَ. This is mentioned in the context of belief in life after death. And there are many verses like this. And the Quran also says, "هل جزاء الإحسان إلا الإحسان?" This should be clear that the reward of good must be good. Mm-hmm. If there is no reward for good, then there must be something wrong with this world. If those who do good, and as I said, on whose behavior society depends and becomes even possible for people to have a human society, if their sacrifices are absolute and then there is no reward, this is something that a human reason doesn't accept. Therefore, using our own reason, we say this cannot be the case. There must be life after this, where those who do good are rewarded and those who do evil are punished.
Held accountable for what they have done. Sheikh, I have a question on this topic here. And that is, what about the people who make these types of sacrifices, even though they do not necessarily believe in the Day of Judgment?
Yes, we are not saying now, inshallah we'll talk about this when we come to discuss the relationship between morality and religion. We are now saying that even if they do this, and there are people, we must admit that there are people who make some of these sacrifices, and they might justify this by some of the gains they think they make in this life. Someone who doesn't like to be called a liar, or someone who is a merchant, say, and he wants to be known for his honesty. In this way, he will gain, and so on. But the problem comes when an absolute sacrifice has to be made. Yeah, and if he knows that he is not going to gain anything by telling the truth or being honest or fulfilling a certain promise. I mean, that's why most politicians don't abide by moral values, because they abide by them when it suits their purpose or their interest. But this is not the question now. The question is, even when they do this, and they are not rewarded, there must be something wrong with the world. If people who do good and make these sacrifices becomes the people who are irrational, who are fools, in fact, because they make absolute sacrifices, and the people who are dishonest, who are liars, again, in this world. So there must be a life where, an afterlife where those who do good find
will be rewarded.
Yes.
Sheikh, I don't want to jump to conclusions here, but when the Quran speaks of the Day of Judgment, now the idea is not for the believers to become passive in a sense that do not accept or tolerate oppression simply because the oppressor will be punished in the hereafter, and you as the oppressed, you will be rewarded in the hereafter. And I remember reading back then that when the statement was made that religion is the opium of the masses, if we keep saying that, you know what, the joy for the believers is in the hereafter, the punishment for the oppressors is in the hereafter, how does one balance between what I do here versus what I expect?
In fact, the people who stand against the oppressors and suffer, they will be rewarded. It doesn't say because Allah will punish them, so you sit back and don't do anything. No. You remember the famous hadith, Sayyidu Shuhada'i Hamza, وَرَجُلٌ قَامَ إِلَىٰ إِمَامٍ جَائِرٍ فَأَمَرَهُ وَنَهَاهُ فَقَتَلَهُ. The best martyr is someone who goes to an oppressor, a ruler who's and he tells him, he advises him, and then the ruler kills him. Mm-hmm. So he will be in the same position as that famous martyr, Hamza, the uncle of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So it doesn't say, because of course some people can interpret it this way, and but that is a very wrong interpretation. And in this way, religion becomes really an opium.
Believing the hereafter is an incentive,
yes,
for believers to stand,
yes,
up.
Yes, and that's why someone said, Islam is not an opium. But it is. What is the opposite of opium? Something that wakes you up, so Islam is not an opium. For example, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam many of the companions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, we made a pledge with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam that we will tell the truth wherever we are. So if you tell the truth, you are bound to suffer in this world. So the person who really believes in the hereafter should be the person who will be ready to make sacrifices, especially against people who are utterly immoral and who do a lot of harm to society.
You remind me of a story, Sheikh.
I hope we are not being terrorists now.
One of the students at school, there was a question about what is your favorite attribute of God, and what are the practical implications for that attribute in your own personal life. And the answers that I got from the students were, people say, I like Al-Kareem, the generous or the noble, I like Al-Ghaffar, the most forgiving, and what have you. And I get the student, and he wrote that his favorite name of Allah was Al-Mumit. His favorite name was the one that who causes death or takes away life. And I was reading in his explanation, and he said, because wherever I see wrong, I stand up against it and I criticize it, knowing that only God can take away my life. To him, he said, believing in this actually became an incentive for me to be that positive citizen to speak against evil.
Yes, that's a good understanding of the verse.
But the idea is not to become passive.
No, of course not. Because as this student said, this is as it should be. Because if you believe in the hereafter and you compare what you are enjoying in this life with what you are promised in the hereafter, you see this as a trifle. Mm. And you would be ready to sacrifice this for something that is that is better. And that you will have immediately after you die. So it will not be difficult for you to even sacrifice your own life to go to the. You can sacrifice your wealth, your perhaps lose a job or position or so, but you can go to the extent of even sacrificing your own life for the sake of upholding. These moral values.
Sure. Johan, also another thing in Islam is the idea of restraining yourself. So it's not only about sacrifices, but you can look into pleasure as a sacrifice that you forego your pleasure, but the idea of restraining yourself for the sake of what you are promised in the hereafter.
Of course, even when you restrain, this means you are making sacrifice also.
That is, you're foregoing your own pleasure at this point. Yeah. So, Sheikh, we spoke about two things here. The moral argument, and also, you said, the logical or the physical, logical...
The first evidence, it is not an argument, it is an evidence, you can say. I don't know that you can say an argument. To prove that this is possible. That the resurrection is not something that is impossible. Because if it is something is impossible, it must be wrong. Now, these people who come to the Prophet and say, how can... They are saying, you are not telling the truth. We believe in God, but we know that God does not do impossibilities, logical impossibilities. And this is impossible. So how can you claim that God does it? He says, no, it is not impossible. It is not impossible. And the proof that it is not impossible is this.
God does it with other things. And the example was the barren land that was dead and then it was brought up to life again. Okay, with this, inshallah, we come to the conclusion of this part of our episode with our guest here, Dr. Jafar Sheikh Idris. It was indeed a pleasure to have you with us, sir. Inshallah, do stay with us when we come back the next time. Until then, we say so long. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.